Hi, I'm Hugh Hewitt. Thank you for listening to the Town Hall Review podcast, where we bring you the best voices on the stories and issues that matter. Our podcast is brought to you through partnership with the Pepperdine Graduate School of Public Policy and ADF, the Alliance Defending Freedom. Here's another piece that I trust you'll enjoy.
Mike Gallagher.
I was reading from Sean Spicer's new book, and the briefing is out, and it is... It is such a fascinating read, and there was something that Sean wrote about something he said regarding one of his press conferences. I remember thinking, read it over the weekend, I thought, I don't care what you are politically, if you can't feel for a guy who stands at a podium and getting the barrage that he faces, or she faces, now in the case of Sarah Sanders, every day, and then say something that you wish immediately you could take back. And that's what Sean talked about, and it had to do with when he said something about even Hitler didn't use chemical warfare, and he was trying to make a point about on the battlefield, didn't realize how bad it was until he got on a plane, and it's a very personal account of what Sean went through as White House press secretary. Of course, it changed his life. He writes about it in the briefing, and it is great to welcome back to the Mike Gallagher Show, Sean Spicer. Sean, it's been a while. It's good having you back on the program. How have you been, sir?
I have been well. Thank you for having me.
You bet. Congratulations.
Thank you for that. Thank you, and thank you for that kind introduction.
No, it's true. I mean, and you know, I was talking to a friend of mine over the weekend and mentioned that I was going to have you on, and he said, I guarantee you, he wakes up every day saying, I got out just in time. I mean, and we both had a laugh like you did. But I mean, boy, things if things were in the thick of it when you were there, boy, it feels like the Sean Spicer era was a walk in the park compared to what we're going through today.
Yeah, I mean, I think Sarah has done a fantastic job of conveying the president's message and cutting through a lot of the noise that the media makes. And as you kind of said at the outset, part of the reason I wrote this book, The Briefing, is that I wanted people who had sort of a one-dimensional view of either who I was or how things worked to get a little bit of a background as to how you know, who I was as a person, why I made some of the decisions that I made, and then also a deeper understanding of the process.
Right.
Both, like, you know, from the convention to the campaign, to the transition, and obviously the White House. But I've always been like one of those people that loves to know, you know, kind of how the sausage is made, what goes on behind the scenes, whether it's a radio program or, you know, some kind of production. I love the backstage piece of things.
Sure.
And I think that it was kind of neat for me to be able to write this account of how things work in so many different aspects of, you know, things that people see all the time.
Yeah, I'm intrigued because you're one of the few people who could say I was there during the campaign, the transition, in the White House. Because a lot of folks who have worked for the president, they're in segments. They're segments of this trajectory,
right,
and you've got this perspective, you know, all throughout. And I wonder if today, looking back at all the time that you spent working on the campaign, working on the transition, is there sort of a sense of amazement at how toxic and how volatile and how charged the atmosphere is today, Sean?
Yeah, and I try to give people a little bit of a behind the scenes as part of the problem is that everybody who's working there that's not the president, your job is to be focused on him and his agenda, not yourself. So what happens is all of this stuff is incoming, sometimes not based at all in reality or truth, and yet you kind of just have to brush it aside,
right?
Because you can't, you're not there to fight stories about yourself or try to change narratives, and so every once in a while you have to because they're just so egregious. But it is constant, and it is unbelievably intense. And I think that when you look at not just the White House, but as you point out, the totality of it, the transition and the campaign. I was at the RNC for 6 years. It was just nonstop.
Right.
And you once in a while, I stop. And one of the coolest parts about writing the book actually was being able to pause for a while and really think about all of those historic moments and think, holy smokes, I forgot that this is, you know, this moment happened at the convention or that this, I you know, there are just things that until you really stop and reflect on them, you kind of forget all of these moments that collectively made you know, part of that campaign, part of history, and then obviously the first big chunk of the White House.
If you don't mind, share the story about the comments you made that kind of blew up and you unintentionally created a firestorm when you were talking about chemical weapons. Do you mind sharing that with us?
Yeah, sure. Thank you for it's part of my therapy, Bill.
Well, I mean, my gosh, because as a talk show, and obviously I can relate because there are things I say, and then a week later I find out somebody writes about it and think, oh, wait a minute, that's not what I meant to say, and you got to choose everything carefully. And boy, did you learn that lesson in a pretty profound way at that press conference?
I did, and so basically, the long and short of it is, Assad had done these atrocities to his people, and we were trying to talk about the president's response and how egregious we found his actions and towards his own people, and he was using chemical weapons, and it was just disgusting what he had done to his own people, including obviously young children, and it had a profound effect on the president of the United States. And I had been in this impromptu sort of little gathering in the president's private dining room off the Oval Office, and Secretary Mattis was kind of going through just how historically deplorable Assad's actions were. And
right.
He was talking about how they, you know, Hitler never used these chemical weapons on the battlefield. I mean, clearly he had used them in the Holocaust that we're all aware of. And so I'm out there and the briefing comes up, and I kind of had just been batting down. I think I talk about this in the book. There's like the first 11 of the 15 questions were about Syria and Assad, and I just batted them down one after another. And then I kind of, on the 16th question, kind of, you know, another question on Syria comes up. And for whatever reason, I wanted to ramp it up, and I wanted to really kind of give perspective on what an evil, despicable person Assad was.
Right.
And so I say, you know, not even Hitler used these weapons, but I omitted the phrase on the battlefield, right? And what's happening, and I talk about this, is that, like, you're standing there and you're staring out at this room of whatever it is at the time, you know, on any given day, but probably close to like 100 reporters who had their hand raised, and you're already thinking five steps ahead. Who's the next reporter? Who's the one after that? What are they going to? Well, you know, hey, what are – and your mind is going a million miles an hour. And
right.
So I think to myself, okay, like, keep going. And – Cecilia Vega from ABC News kind of gets to me, I think, a couple questions later, and I walk through the chronology of this whole thing in the book. But basically, a couple questions later, says, hey, like, do you want to clarify? And I'm thinking, clarify what? Like, I mean, I said how horrible this guy is.
Right,
I mean, I think it speaks for itself. And, you know, I wrap up the briefing, and my staff's looking at me like I just, you know, stepped in the biggest pile of, you know what.
Right.
And I'm like, and they're like, that needs to get cleaned up. And I'm thinking, oh my God, that's why she was, you know, that's clearly what it was.
Right.
In the heat of the moment, in the pace was the intensity of that moment. I don't think I fully appreciated how bad I screwed it up.
Well, and Sean, if I may, the humanness of the words I read that you wrote about how the idea that you could have hurt anybody by invoking Hitler, and of course there is an old rule. I go back 25 years. One of my first bosses in New York City said, "Never take it to the level of comparing somebody to Hitler." You know,
well, and you, Mike, if you know, in the book, I literally, Reince Priebus, who was then chief of staff, walks in and he says, "What's the first thing you taught me in media training?" And I was like, "I know."
Don't invoke Hitler.
I had echoed the advice that you had gotten for years.
Right. But I related to that when you said I just really felt for you when you said that the last thing you wanted to do was take it to a level where you could cause harm or discomfort or pain to anybody in trying to, like you said, spell out what a bad guy Assad is.
Right. And the worst part is, I mean, I think in that particular moment to realize that there were so many people who probably found those comments, you know, very offensive.
Right.
And if, to know that I had made that, had you know, been responsible for that was just, I don't think I've ever had a worse feeling in my life.
Right. Yeah.
And it was just, you know, to this day, every time, you know, when I was writing about it and when I was dealing with it, you're reliving it and you're saying to yourself, you know, holy smokes, if I could take, I mean, that's in the top five of things I would want to.
He writes about it in the book, and it's fascinating. It's intriguing, and it shows the humanity of somebody who, listen, when you're in the heat of the battle like this, the way people are dehumanized who work in the Trump administration is really appalling. Sean Spicer is with us. His new book, The Briefing. Sean, my friend and colleague Hugh Hewitt and I have had a big disagreement about some of the antics of these reporters in the White House press briefing. And because some of these guys, you could tell, they just want to get on TV. They're trying to show up, right. Sarah. They're trying to make a soundbite. They want to get clicks. And I get all that. I don't understand. It seems to me that it's a privilege to be sitting in the White House briefing room. There's not, but how many people in there? 50, 40, 30, whatever the number is.
I think it's 49 seats, but they can get a good 100 or so.
100
in there.
People in there, but that's there's not a lot. And there's lots of other people who work at these different news media organizations. But I guess it's sacrosanct. There's some kind of, it's like a holy grail to suggest to have a press credential pulled if you're showing up and disrespecting the press secretary in a briefing. In other words, she wants to move on from somebody. It's almost like you feel like she's almost, and you've been through this, where you feel like you're losing control. They're kind of turning on you. Is it really that crazy for the White House to say to somebody, hey, if you want to carry on like this, carry on out on 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue. Coming into the White House is a privilege. There are other reporters at your organization who can come in and cover this. We're just not going to let you in there. Is that a bridge too far, Sean, or do you think I'm on to something?
No, I respectfully disagree. I think that there's two things. One is because I think once you start pulling a pass, then you're going down a slippery slope. Mm-hmm. But here's where I will say this. I do think that there should be a level of decorum. When a conservative called out Barack Obama at a press conference, which I believe at the time was inappropriate then, that there was this press conference in the Rose Garden, they got up, they started yelling at the president about questions they had. I thought it was disrespectful and inappropriate.
Right.
Likewise, I think it's amazing now that other reporters call it standing up for it's like, wait a second, it was inappropriate when a conservative did it against Obama, which I agree with. It was out of line.
I get it.
And now apparently it's the new normal when we're supposed to be applauding these journalists for not raising their – I mean, we would expect more from kindergarteners.
I know.
And to say you raise your hand, you wait to be called on, you ask your question, you have to play. That's what I have a problem with. What my biggest issue is the idea that the fellow reporters don't say those kind of antics and behavior give us all a bad name.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's just – and that's where I think that the press corps itself – has to start looking inward and saying, do we agree that there is some level of decorum that we should exhibit?
Well, and everybody is in sort of a churn right now, aren't they? I mean, look at and the mainstream media. We should not lose sight of the fact that those who are going after President Trump with the intensity they are, it doesn't look like it's paying off. If you look at the cable news wars, I mean, CNN is in a distant third to Fox News and MSNBC. Just was announced moments ago, the New York Daily News is cutting half of its newsroom staff, saying they're going to start focusing on breaking news involving crime, civil justice, public responsibility. A lot of media watchers are really freaking out over this, iconic paper, the New York Daily News, cutting its newsroom in half. Laying off a lot of people. I mean, everything, it does feel like the whole media world is changing right now. And certainly we've never seen a president like this. This country has never experienced a president quite the way President Trump, governs and delivers his message. What a time to be alive and see all these changes.
So here's what I just want to be clear on. And I think you and I are on the same page on this. But I think that, number one, any democracy, especially ours, needs a healthy and robust press corps.
Agreed.
Number two, I welcome tough questions, and I think like journalists should be dogged. They should be out there pursuing the truth and stories. And the difference, and somehow the antics have become the symbol of protecting the First Amendment.
Right.
I don't think that they're not synonymous. Like you can be tenacious and tough, and frankly, in the book. Mike, I name a ton of reporters and said, these are reporters that I don't necessarily agree with, that I've not always had the best relationship with, but I think they are solid professional journalists.
No, there's a lot. And I try to remind people that all the time. There are responsible journalists who feel like they need to do their job. Tough questions. You're right. That's correct. But there's a word that has emerged under the Trump era, and that's resistance. And there are people who say, resist. You must resist. We got to get in people's faces. We're gonna throw drinks on people. We're going to chase people out of restaurants. We must resist. And when a reporter covering the Trump administration acts like they're part of that resistance, Sean Spicer, that's a problem.
No, and I agree. And one of the things that's so interesting about, and part of the reason I wrote the briefing, is that I wanted people to understand a little bit of the background on how some of these stories happen. Mm-hmm. Because you see one side, I can talk, you know, the difference between your show and a lot of these stories is that, you know, you hear what you say, you hear what I say.
Right.
And I call in, you put me on air. And so there's nothing that happens behind the scenes. What you hear is what you get. When you see one of these print stories or a television story, they're editing it heavily. And they're saying, this is what we, you know, so, and I get it. That's part of the news business. But what readers don't see, or viewers in many cases, is what happened beyond what they're getting. And I think that's the issue that, you know, to your point about objectivity, they go out of their way, in many cases, to paint the most negative story.
The most awful,
and frankly, omit parts of the what happened because it didn't fit into the narrative.
Well, I hope the book is a big hit. I guarantee it will be. Lots of people talking about the briefing. Final question, Sean, as we let you go. We, you had a hearty laugh when I told you my friend said, I'll bet he's glad he got out of there just in time. Is there truth to saying, thank goodness I'm not in that press briefing every day these days? I mean, are you glad to be out of it?
Absolutely. Look, I was honored to do the job. It was truly a privilege of a lifetime. You talk about being the number of people who get to be in the press briefing room. The number of press people who have held the press secretary title, I think, is 30 or less.
Wow.
And it was an honor to serve this country.
Wow.
That being said, prior to being at that White House, I was at the RNC for 6 years.
Yep.
I am excited to watch, be a viewer instead of a briefer, and be able to spend more time with my wife and family and pursue a lot of the causes and interests that I have. So I love doing it, but I'm glad that I can move on.
Congratulations on the book, Sean, and thanks for taking time out of your very, very busy whirlwind schedule to join us here on the Mike Gallagher Show. Look forward to seeing you again soon. Keep fighting the good fight.
Thanks for listening to the Town Hall Review. Your freedom is under attack, but if you act now, you can protect not only your family, but generations to come. Go to townhallreview.com, and to find out how you can join Alliance Defending Freedom to help ensure the opponents of freedom don't dictate your future. That's townhall.com. If you enjoy your podcast, take a moment, tell a friend to subscribe today.